Henbury Springs and Lake Cardjeligo, or Salem the Buccaneer Archipelago. They're all up listening to Macca on a Sunday morning. They're running the bulls each year in Weeper. They don't wear clothes, they say it's cheaper. And someone's seen Hale Bob right up the Khyber. In Sebastopol and Clifton Downs, in a thousand sleepy country towns, they're waking up to Macca.
Paul's in Perth. Morning, Paul.
Yeah, morning, Macca. I'm actually about an hour south of Perth now, just driving back to our farm in Metricup down on the southwest near Margaret River. I've just flown back in from the Kimberley yesterday, just taking part in a charity cycling event. Mountain bike ride on the Gibb River Road from Derby up to El Questro Station in the north.
Speaking of bikes, I spoke to a lady the other day and she told me about her partner who rounds up his sheep on his push bike. I think I'd recommend that to you, Paul. You could round up your cattle on your push bike and we'll put you in good stead for when you go on the Gibb River Road.
That's a very good idea, but I'm not sure I can ride fast enough to round up our cows.
It's all practice, Paul. I mean,
that's right.
Don't say no before you've tried it.
No, I'll give it a crack.
Think of the benefits.
No, I'll give it a go, and I'll actually get my wife out on hers as well. Two of us at my work.
Well, it could do. Maybe you could take the dog. The dog would do most of the work, of course.
Yeah, the dog would probably do it better than we would. I'm not sure how we'd go with the bulls, though.
Well, you'll probably ring me in 6 months, say I'm mustering on my mountain bike.
I might be calling you from hospital, saying I tried to muster on the mountain bike.
And there's dolphins in the Derwent, right near Brook Street. The family's scattered all round Oz, but it doesn't matter on Sundays, because we're all together with Macca on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
I wait all week for Macca on a Sunday morning.
Good morning, welcome to the program. That was the bloke from Metricup last week, Paul from Perth, and he was from Metricup. And Jan Barrett says, Ian, Macca, the up in town names is of. So, in the Noongar language, so Nanup is of a resting place. So the up, there's lots of ups. There's that song that goes, everything's up down south, because all the, in the south of Western Australia, there's a lot of ups, if you know what I mean. So everything's up down south. Is the name of Alan Hill here from Tauranga in New Zealand. I've been listening to your show every week for the last 20 years. If I miss any parts, I progressively catch up on the podcast of the ABC website. On the subject of beanies, which we've been talking about, and you need them, isn't it cold? I've attached a connection with whom I purchased two beanies, one for myself and the other for a friend whose brother's died of Huntington's disease. They are knitted in Tassie with wool from the Bendigo Wool Company, so dinkum Aussie. Enjoy the show, says Alan Hill. New Zealand needs one like yours. Well, I know quite a few people listen in New Zealand, Alan, but I don't think they have anything quite like the ABC. Who does? Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Anyway, this is from Dulcie. Dulcie says, on Easter Sunday, a gentleman on your show was talking about the Moresby mice. That's right. He was rang from Borneo. I volunteer for the Claude Dawson Machinery Preservation Club in Billawela in Queensland, and we have a book about the Moresby mice in our collection. I've enclosed a photo of the front cover, and it says Moresby mice. It's a great big picture of a big face with a soldier with a helmet. It's a caricature by G.B. Bill Graham. The Aussies and the Yanks in Papua. The Moresby mice is the name of the thing. So we've got a book in our collection. I have enclosed a photo of the front cover. Inside there are copies of newspaper cuttings and poetry written by the soldiers who were there. The book is dedicated to the Aussies and the Yanks who fought and worked and laughed together during the grim days of 42 to 43. I had never heard of the Moresby mice, says Dulcie, until I saw the book. So I was interested in your caller's story. Yeah. I thought that may be of interest. Our club is all set to host our annual is it Queensland Wheels in Motion Rally, which is always held on the third weekend in July. Unfortunately, COVID stopped 2021, and last year it was too wet. This year we'll be featuring 100 years of Howard production, says Dulcie Cooper. And next year is 100 years since Billawela was gazetted a town, and we'll have the pleasure of hosting the Queensland Heritage Rally on the 19th to the 21st of July 2024. Says Dulcie. Thank you, Dulcie. And good morning to Semaphore Park and good morning, Debra. The more's be my say. Our number this morning is 1300 700 222. On the program this morning in the All Over News, a little bit about community, but also about electricity and what it's doing to people. The price of electricity just seems to go up and up and up. Compare it to what it was, say, in 2010 and look at it now. And it was all privatised, wasn't it, years ago? That was a good idea. We used to get our electricity from the county council. Remember those good old days? I think they were good old days, but times have changed, the world's changed. You've just got to deal with it in some sort of way, haven't you? Also, yeah, the All Over News, lovely Why I Live Where I Live. I pulled some stuff out of the archives. You'll meet some of the people I've talked to. And music in the streets, and you, 1300 700 222. G'day, this is Macca. Hello.
Good morning, Macca. It's Troy speaking.
Hi, Troy. Where are you?
Well, we've just pulled up our little dinghy on Sandy Island, which is this beautiful little sand island about a nautical mile from Tinder Harbour at Cleveland. And I've spent half my life there just messing about, Macca, and it's a beautiful vista here this morning. We have very little breeze on Moreton Bay, and it was a spectacular sunrise.
It's a lovely, much underrated, you know. People talk about Sydney Harbour, which is beautiful, but Moreton Bay is a lovely, lovely area, isn't it?
Well, it is one of the most diverse estuarine systems anywhere in the world, and it's internationally revered. And the boundaries go from the Caloundra breakwater to the Gold Coast Seaway. So it's a significant body of water, and we have a myriad of islands, major islands in Moreton and Stradbroke, but we also have some smaller Southern Bay islands and a myriad of beautiful mangrove islands which run down to the Gold Coast Seaway. So it's been my backyard since I was a young boy, Macca, and I'm just so passionate about my involvement with rubbish collection and environmental issues on Moreton Bay as well.
And how do you do that? How do you collect rubbish on the bay in a barge? That's what people usually do, don't they?
We just sometimes we sail, sometimes we take a small outboard and a dinghy, and we go into the mangrove enclaves on the western side of Peel Island. We go to Horseshoe Bay and the heavily frequented areas, and we just collection bags from a great organisation called Tangaroa Blue, which was started by Heidi Taylor. And she's done some amazing initiatives around Australia. She actually stopped packaging being taken out by the West Australian fishing fleet because the pilchard boxes were just being discarded and ending up on the beaches of Western Australia. So she went, and that's when she actually started doing you take data sheets and you actually write down everything that you collect, and then she correlates that, and then she goes to government and says, well, these are the litter strains and we have to stop that. And then the West Australian government actually legislated in preventing those pilchard boxes from leaving the docks. They had to actually decant the bait before they left port. So a great lady. And all you do is you just get on their website and pay for the packaging or the postage, and they send you the collection bags. And they're very durable. They last about 2 years, and they're quite big. So you can collect a significant amount of litter. And that's what we've been doing for 25 years, Macca.
There you go. Well, you're a busy boy, aren't you, Troy?
Well, I also wanted to ring and say that my childhood obsession is a landing barge which has been working out of Cleveland since 1974. She was built by a company called Index Marine in 1973, and that's the Moongalba. And Moongalba means sitting place, which is part of the Quandamooka Minjeribah, the signatory Aboriginal tribes on North Stradbroke Island. And she's had an amazing career, Macca. She's been to New Zealand for 7 years. She was seconded down to Bruny Island and did the Bruny Island run for about 3 or 4 years. She went to Western Australia. And then I wrote to Heather Truman, who was the general manager of SeaLink, and pleaded for her to come home because she's just got such a historical relationship with Moreton Bay. And in April last year, she came home. So we're seeing her ply the Southern Bay Islands at the moment because the SeaLink terminal at Redland Bay is under renewal. And so she's actually running from Cleveland and servicing Russell Island, Carragara Island, Macleay and Lamb Island. And from that, I did a commission at Redland Art Gallery, and we used the Moongalba wheelhouse, and we did a mural in the gallery, and it features all of the endemic and migratory bird species that frequent the Moreton Bay Marine Park.
Wow, as I said, you're a busy You're a busy boy. Now, one of the other things that I remember hearing your voice, you ring me from time to time about rugby league, don't you?
I certainly do.
About the Queensland Cup. Yeah.
Yeah, the Queensland Cup. And I've been hearing you speak very effusively about PNG and the potentiality for them to be issued an NRL licence. Mm. Well, we have the PNG Hunters playing in the Queensland Cup. They've been in the competition since 2014. They won the competition in 2018, and they had they were estranged from their from going home for 2 years with their travel restrictions, but they're now back playing at the National Sports Stadium in Port Moresby, and they get thousands of people turning up to the games. And when they play in Brisbane, I went and watched them play Wynnum Manly last weekend, and the crowd swells because they are the real entertainers of the Queensland Cup. So that's the foundation stone, Macca, that will see them eventually, I think, be granted a licence in the National Rugby League.
Well, they're just so enthusiastic, and there's no big money in all that. You know, it's rugby league back to like it used to be, or football back to like it used to be. And that's what I think people like about it. So I thought that's going to be a great thing. But the other thing is, of course, Queenslanders will be full of happiness if they win their match on Wednesday night. It's the state of origin. And, of course, the whole state will need counselling if it happens that they don't win. It's quite a bizarre thing, this state of origin thing. I'm completely over it because I'm over 21 now, so I'm over it.
Well, Macca, it was nice to hear passionate New South Wales Welshman in Phil Gould saying about selection of immortals. It comes up on a podcast, and I saw this interview with Matthew Thompson, and they're talking about players that have only been recently retired, but he was an advocate of recognising those players that have been retired for 30 or 40 years. He was talking about people like Peter Stirling and Ron Coote. And I think that's very important that we remember. And also Brisbane Rugby League, back before the Broncos came in, inception of the Broncos in 1988, we used to have players selected from the Brisbane competition to play State of Origin. And that was just such a great kudos for the standard of the Brisbane competition that we would play against those credentialed New South Wales sides, and we'd actually defeat them with players from the Brisbane competition. And that was my favourite era.
Yeah, well, look, I think it's there's a lot of wonderful players that... Like in life, mate, I think there's a lot of wonderful people that never get recognised. What's the line out of that? As many a flower destined to bloom unseen and spread its perfume on the desert air. And that applies to life. And that's what I go looking for in not in football, but just generally in life. There's lots of wonderful people that you never hear of, but are just, you know, talented or doing wonderful things. So... You know, we make
Well, Macca, I can certainly equate to that because I'll do a stretch of beach and nobody will even know that I've cleaned that beach. But it gives me great satisfaction to know that when people arrive, the beach is pristine and we've mitigated the potentiality for a turtle to swallow a plastic bag. So that's what enriches my soul as well.
Good on you, Troy. Great to talk to you. Good luck with the Moongalba. And, yes, enjoy sailing on that lovely, lovely Moreton Bay.
Thank you so much for taking my call, Macca. Have a great day.
Where are you, Colin?
Oh, hello, Macca. It's I'm in Pennant Hills.
In Sydney, yep. What's happening?
In Sydney. Well, pretty chilly here this morning, rugged up. But I thought I'd ring you and let you know about the new initiative that is happening. Mm. I'm a ham radio operator, and we've started a station down at the Australian National Maritime Museum on board the HMS Vampire. And I put together a team of eight people, and we're down there most Saturdays and one day during the week talking around the world. But the most important thing that is happening at the moment is on the 3rd and the 4th of June coming up this weekend, is a thing called the Museum Ships on the Air. And that's about ships around the world. There's something like about 100 have been registered where they're going to have amateur radio stations on board. And it's just a sort of a friendly communication between warships, destroyers, minesweepers, submarines, aircraft carriers and so forth. And if you're able to contact 15 different ships, in the group, then there's a lovely certificate you win. But I started the initiative on board the ship to sort of value add to the display at the museum. People are enthralled when they come in and hear us talking overseas to someone in Norway or America or London or somewhere like that. And they get a great thrill out of hearing the Morse key when we're talking on Morse or voice. And we get a lot of fun out of it.
There's a lost art, isn't it? There's a lost art, using a Morse key.
Oh, absolutely. It took me 6 months, 15 minutes every day to learn Morse. I wouldn't say I'm an expert, but I can hold my own. 15 words a minute is relatively slow compared to some of our people around the world. The Japanese are absolute experts at something like 30 words a minute.
See, a lot of people wouldn't even know what Morse code is, but you've got to send it and you've got to be able to receive it too. So if you receive it, you've got your pen and your paper and you're writing down the letters as they come through and making words, and it's quite an art, isn't it? It's a bit like...
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, one of the things, when you get a bit fast, you don't even write it down. You do what they call head reading.
Mm.
And, you know, when you first start off, you hear T and then you hear H and then you hear E. And when you get a little bit faster, you go, oh, there's the... And you're able to sort of pick out words. I'm sort of getting to that stage, and it's a lot of fun. You know, you learn so much about different cultures around the world, and you know, you spend a few hours talking to different people.
Yeah, I know.
I've spent a lot of time talking to Japanese, and they've been teaching me Japanese, and I've been teaching them English. And we've had some lovely exchanges, a lot of fun.
You'd think in this age of the internet, it's called the net, but years ago when my dad was a ham, he said, I'm just going up on the net for a while, and it's been superseded by the internet, hasn't it? But you'd wonder, is it still a popular pastime being a ham radio person, or is it sort of...
Oh, absolutely. In the district here, there's 80-odd people.
Mm.
I believe there's 16,000 amateurs in Australia, so it's far from being dead. There's about 8 major clubs in Sydney. They also lend their hand if there's an emergency to support the authorities if there's something major happens.
So tell me about these ships on the air. You're talking about, you said museum ships on the air. Are these ships that were once operating but now they're sort of museums as ham places so you can talk to them?
That's right. They're all around the world. There are numbers of ships which have been taken out of service, decommissioned. And the Navy has turned it over to certain areas which are naval sort of museums, a bit like the Australian National Maritime Museum, which has got a wonderful collection down there.
Mm.
There's some interesting stories. I don't know whether you know about the crate, the World War II commando.
Oh, yes.
A boat, but it's down there. I had the privilege of stepping on board that and having a look. Amazing story, and what some gutsy people they were, those commandos.
Yes, I'll say.
But we've done training as a guide on the Vampire. You learn all about the ship, and I've done some training on the Onslow, the submarine, and that's a lot of fun.
So this happens on the 3rd and 4th of June, is that right?
That's right, on the weekend, yes. And if there's any ham radio operators out there, the frequency we're working on is 14.200. 14.200. So
They'll know what that means, Colin. Good on you, mate. Good luck.
All right. Thanks for your time, Macca. Have a great day.
Pleasure.
Hi, Macca. It's Amanda from Melbourne calling.
Hi, Amanda.
How are you?
Yeah, good. What
good.
About you?
I was going to call last week. I was up in Koh Samui in Thailand, and it was 39 degrees, felt like 41. And I'm now in Melbourne. It's pouring rain outside, and it's 10 degrees and freezing.
What were you doing in where was it?
Well, my daughter lives in Hong Kong. She works up there, and we met in Bangkok and flew out to Koh Samui in Thailand and had a beautiful week in the sun just to catch up.
Well, that's a nice thing to do. Koh Samui.
Yeah. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful island in Thailand. Absolutely. The people are beautiful. The food's beautiful. And I'm just sitting here eating my oats for breakfast, drinking my green tea, and I thought I'd give you a call and say hello because we were 3 hours behind last week, so I didn't have a chance to call.
We have an occasional correspondent from Thailand who has lived, not lived rough, but lived differently in Australia, but has moved to Thailand and lives amongst the people that you're talking about, the lovely people, lives a simple life, you know, green tea and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And he says it's the best thing therapeutically for the mind, I think, to do it simple.
Absolutely. The food's so beautiful and clean. And I went plant-based on the 1st of January because I had a cholesterol problem.
Uh-huh.
And
is that hard to do?
It's the best thing I've ever done in my life.
No, but is it harder?
I watched a documentary last year called Forks Over Knives, and it's changed my life.
Yeah, see, I think of I should stop because I love butter. Butter is beautiful. And I love butter.
Yeah,
but
I used to have bread with my butter too.
but I think and every time I think I'm going to stop eating butter, and then next minute I just automatically go to the butter and bread and butter.
Yeah, I don't miss it. I don't miss it at all. I'm eating. I cook really beautiful food now, and there's a Dr. McDougall in America, and Dr. Esselson. There's so many people that are on the plant-based, no dairy diet. There's a wonderful guy in Australia called Simon Hill. He has a podcast every Tuesday. He's just full of knowledge. He bases himself. He's in Bondi and up in Bali, and it's just a wonderful way of life. You have so much energy. I've lost so much weight, which is fantastic. And I got my cholesterol down. And my cardiologist said to me, "How did you do this?" I said, "Because I just went plant-based, no dairy."
For how long? How long have you been plant-based?
I did it for two months. Well, before Christmas, when I watched Forks Over Knives, the documentary on YouTube, my cholesterol was 5.8 or 6.1, something like that.
Mm.
And I stopped. I did it the first. Went through Christmas, did it on the 1st of January, and then in 2 months I got it down to 4.0.
Well, whatever.
I couldn't have put you on a statin and got that result for you. And my LDL cholesterol has dropped enormously too.
I start to shiver and shudder all over when I think about going, well, not going plant-based, but stopping all the things that I shouldn't eat, like sugar and butter and stuff like that. But I'll try it, Amanda. I'll keep you in.
Yeah, give it a go, Macca. You'll love it.
I drink black tea. Is that a good start? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great tea, but change to green tea. It's got much more antioxidants in it for you.
All right. Okay, Amanda. So it's raining in Melbourne. What do you do with yourself, Amanda?
I work at a hospital called Epworth in Richmond, a beautiful hospital.
Mm.
And I worked last night till 10 o'clock, just on reception. So just my little retirement job, Macca, and the rest of the time I'd sort of travel the world.
Well, I'm going to go to Koh Samui. Good on you, Amanda.
Go to Koh Samui. Okay, have a great day. Bye.
See you, bye. It's you nice.
Macca, Pete Dennehy, mate.
Oh, g'day, Pete. How are you?
Good.
Are you in the...
I'm ringing from Hiroshima.
Oh, wow. What are you doing there, Pete? Tell us. You're playing there.
I've got a group of Aussies with me. This is one of my sort of twice yearly music tours to Japan. So I bring a bunch of Aussie music fans over to Japan, and we travel from Tokyo to Kumamoto and in between, and looking at checking out the bluegrass and country scene in Japan. So that's what we've been doing. So our last music night was the other night in Kumamoto with country music legend over here, Charlie Nagatani, who's played the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville 29 times, and he's 87. And we had a really great night in Kumamoto. But we're heading out to Miyajima, which is an island just out of Hiroshima, today. And then we'll be back in tonight for our last happy hour, and we fly back to Australia tomorrow night. So it's been a terrific group. Like they're just a great bunch of people on this group, and love their music and know their music well. And we've had some really nice experiences, like just sitting in an Irish pub and grabbing a guitar and having a bit of a sing along. It's just been a tremendous trip.
An Irish pub in Hiroshima.
Hiroshima, there's an Irish pub here, and And then this was actually in Kyoto, though. There's an Irish pub. So, yeah, there's a few of them around.
So what's the music scene like in Japan? I mean, musicians you talk to, such as you and I, since, you know, COVID and stuff, I know people have been online and stuff, but the music scene seems to, certainly in the big cities, I know there's music around, but is it thriving and jumping in Japan? And I know there's... Go on, tell us.
Yeah, it is. It is, Mackie, yeah. I mean, we had a bluegrass night cancelled in Tokyo last week. It was short notice due to an illness from somebody, a venue owner. So I had to change the music night at short notice, and we ended up at a rockabilly place. So it was all classic 50s and 60s. And it was jumping. Like, it was, we got in there and they're doing everything from Great Balls of Fire through to, you know, the, what's that, Unchained Melody. And it was, and my my crew was on the dance floor all night. It was just, so that was an unusual night for my tour because it's usually bluegrass and country music. But we have had some great picking parties on this one. So,
well, it makes the world go round, doesn't it, Pete? Music, I mean, well, I don't know. It just gets me moving, and you hear a great song, especially a song that you grew up with or whatever. But a new song, a good song. I've recently heard a water song, which has really been... I didn't know that was one. When did you write the water song, mate?
Oh, that would have been 98 or something like that. About 98, I think I wrote that.
See,
I used to do it on the Slim Dusty show. Actually, because, you know, of course, we lost dear Joy McKean last week. Yeah. And, that was a sad bit of news. I was mentioning the other day, I remember when I was on the road and I remember when Joy McKean turned 70. You know, when I was touring with Slim, and we thought, oh man, you know, Joy's 70. And I guess when I was in my 20s, 70 seemed old. Now I'm 50 and it doesn't seem old at all. It was a tremendous, she was an amazing woman, Joy.
And really, you know, I think if you spoke to Slim and asked her about, no Slim Dusty without Joy McKean, really, if you know what I mean. Do you know what I mean? Two makes the whole, if you know what I mean.
That's right, yeah. And Slim used to say that himself, you know. That she kept Slim in line too, you know, because, I mean, I suppose touring on those, around the showgrounds and everything, you had to keep yourself sort of occupied, otherwise you could you know, I guess it's like anything when you're on the road, you can run off the rails a little bit. And Joy was she was great like that. I mean, even with us as a band, you know, we all pulled our socks up when Joy was around, because she demanded that you know there was a certain standard with the Slim Dusty show, and you had to sort of be flying that flag. You couldn't just get around like a slob. You had to be, you're part of the Slim Dusty show, and you had to be. Yeah, it was great. It was, and I mean that a lot of people have asked me over the years what was the best thing about touring with Slim Dusty. Well, I always say the most precious thing out of it for me is the friendships. You know, the fact that I rang Heather McKean on Mother's Day. That used to be a bit of a thing that I did for ages, and I sort of fell out of contact a bit there because she'd moved. But spoke to her on Mother's Day, and then, you know, and he's always in touch, you know, Anne Kirkpatrick. So Anne and Greg have stayed in Yak, and we see them quite a bit, you know, when they pass through. But yeah, it's tough time for the family, because they're a beautiful family. Mm. All the Kirkpatricks and wonderful people. So,
who was in the TCB, the Travelling Country Band, when you were in it, Pete?
When I first joined, I replaced Mike Kerrin because he was out of the band. So it was me, Jeff Mercer, who lives down at Beechworth now, and Rod Coe and Robbie Suter, and then Mike Kerrin came back. So then it was a five piece. So it was. We saw some terrific shows. You know, got to play Slim's last show in Launceston, the last full touring show. But Yeah, and I got to tell Charlie Nagatani the other night, because Charlie knew of Slim, and I'll let him know about Joy as well. So, but yeah, it was a hell of a privilege to tour someone like Slim. I mean, and I didn't really answer your question before about the music scene here, Macca, but the bluegrass scene. I guess like the bluegrass scene anywhere. It's smaller than everything else, but you can find any niche of music here. I haven't really explored the Celt, the traditional Irish music here, but there is a traditional Irish music scene here. There's an old timey music scene here. There's a blues music scene. There's rock and roll. You could pick pretty much anything, and you'll find people passionate about that style of music and playing it really well.
And there's ukulele clubs, isn't it? I remember talking to Janet Seidel and her band, and they went over there all the time. And Chuck Morgan, who was a great ukulele player, a great guitar player, but they would travel around, you know, and play some gigs and stuff. But then they'd go haunting the ukulele clubs to see what they could find and see what they could see.
Oh yeah, and when they get passionate about anything, it doesn't matter if it's music or anything, but they really take it on and they do it well. You'd have a ball over. Have you been to Japan?
No, I'm going with you next time you tour. No, not next time, but I'm going with you on one of your tours.
Oh, you'd love it, man. Yeah, it's very funny, and when you get a good bunch of people, the dynamic of the group is different every time, but this one is particularly funny. There's a lot of laughs on this trip, and you never know what some of them are going to come out with. And so everyone's enjoying the fact that, you know, a couple of our hotels have the Japanese spa, so we've been taking advantage of that. And this hotel we're in now has free happy hour at 5 o'clock, free wine from 5 to 7, can you believe it? So we've sort of lucked out here. We're pretty happy with that.
Pete, great to talk to you, mate. I'm going to play your song later.
Hi, Macca. This is Jackie calling from the phone box in Seal Rocks.
In New South Wales. What are you doing there, Jackie?
On a road trip looking for surf. We're from the Sunshine Coast in Queensland. Flat today, but the weather's beautiful. It's crystal clear, no clouds. A bit cold this morning, 4 degrees. So,
yeah, you're looking for surf. Well, there's been some big surf, hasn't there, the last couple of weeks?
We had surf up at Scott's Head for about 10 days out of 3 weeks, so that was very good. Mm-hmm.
What sort of board do you ride, Jackie?
Longboard.
Oh, a longboard, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How long have you been riding?
About 25 years.
Uh-huh.
Well, took it up when I was about 40.
Really? Well, you're doing all right then, eh?
I think so. Just a little cold down here in the water. I have to wear a steamer rather than at home.
Yeah, a steamer, meaning you're like a wetsuit, sort of.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Jackie, how long are you on the road for? Just a little while or a long while?
Just a couple of months. We sort of do Woolgoolga, Scott's Head, Seal Rocks, then we go back, working our way back home to Old Bar. There's surf at Wallaby Point there, and then
of course
all those places.
That sounds good. Have you got carpet on your board?
No.
A lot of people have carpet on their board for their knees and stuff like that, you know, when they go.
Yes. Well, no, because I don't get to my knees. You sort of got to jump to your feet.
Yeah, straight from the prone position to your, yeah.
Yes.
In one movement.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's beyond me. All right, Jackie, good on you. Thanks for
calling from
a phone box, and good luck with your catching a wave.
Thanks.
Good
Talk
on
to you.
You
later.
See ya.
Bye.
This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and we've often talked about Australian manufacturing on the program, how it's faring, where it's going. So yesterday I revisited an engineering company that I'd looked at some years ago. The company is Wasson Engineering Plastics, and like all manufacturers in Oz, uses lots and lots of electricity. Come and meet Lance Wasson and Anthony Scott. Last time I was here, Lance Watson, was 6 years ago, I'd say, at least, something like that. Yeah. And we were talking at that time about electricity prices. Who's not been talking about electricity prices in Australia over the last 5 or 10 years? So how's things going electricity-wise? What's the caper?
Well, at the moment, we're on a contract probably to last another 2 years. When that contract comes off, then our prices will dramatically go up.
So you got a 5-year contract, did you?
Yeah, we bought a 5-year contract. So you've got 2 years left.
Have a lot of companies done that? Do a lot of companies do that?
I think so, yeah. You just can't buy the standard. Like, our power bill or our rate is much lower than, you know, your standard house rate. So, yeah, the contract's the only way to go.
So that lasts for 5 years. You've got 2 years to go. So what happens then?
We hope it just doesn't keep going up, but at the moment it'll probably be 40% more than what we are paying now. That's going to hurt.
So what's your electricity bill per month?
About 22,000 to 27,000, somewhere around about that. And it'll probably go to 40,000 a month. It's huge. What do you got to do? You got to pass that on. So all our products are certainly up to go up. But then in some cases, they probably lose a bit of that, you know, customer base because get it from overseas or somewhere else. But we try to be competitive with overseas. We mould large products, so they're not freight friendly, so that protects us a bit from overseas.
Anthony, you're manager here. How do you ameliorate, is that the right word, your energy prices? Apart from having a contract, I suppose you've had to put in energy-saving appliances, have you?
Yeah, so all of our machines, as of last year, we've replaced all of our smaller machines with energy-saving servo drive injection moulding machines, so we don't have any machines older than 2006 in our top factory. And yeah, we've just had to do that to kind of account for the rising prices, because otherwise it'll just have to be passed on to our customers, and not always a welcome increase.
How's the plastics business going?
We do injection moulding here, and we're finding it very slow and very quiet at the moment in general. Probably a number of factors causing that, but it's definitely the quietest I've seen it. I've been here for 13 years, but yeah.
So what do you do? How do you get around that? There's nothing you can do, I suppose.
Oh, we do the normal avenues of advertising and stuff like that, but it's not... our industry is a bit different. It's not like an electrician can go out and get some work, you know, putting PowerPoints in and stuff like that. We have to, you know, get molds made, do all the design and all that kind of stuff before we actually turn a profit. It's quite difficult.
Is it the same in other industries, do you know, across the board?
People I've been speaking to have said, yeah, it's kind of across the board. But yeah, you always hear of different industries booming and different ones are going down at the same time. But the plastic industry seems to be generally slow at the moment.
So Lance, what do you do when you... contract comes up, can you get another contract? Is that what...
Yeah. We can get another contract for 2 years or 5 years. I think the longer you push it out, the cheaper the rate. Let's just hope that power doesn't go through the roof in the next couple of years.
Gone through the roof already, hasn't it? I mean, the last 5 years.
Well, you know, we keep bringing renewables into the market and they say they're cheaper, but the billions of dollars they've got to put into putting the renewables in... poles and wires and all that sort of stuff. I don't think that they tell us the true story of what it is costing, you know, and they're pulling out baseload power, coal-fired power stations, and, you know, not putting gas in, so I think it's just going to keep going up.
Still tough to do business as a manufacturer in Australia?
Oh, yeah. We would have been better off 10 years ago to put it all overseas and not have this regulatory control, the whole bit. It would have been so much easier to have it in, say, Taiwan, which we have a bit of stuff done in Taiwan. Wouldn't have had the headache. You know, we've been here. We've been around for 50 years. This downturn it hurts us, but, you know, we'll be around. But a lot of businesses that have got overdraft, leasing on machines, they'd be hurting big time. We're not in that position, so... People come in here and say, oh, you know, you could double the size of this business and we can lend you $2 or $3 million and and build it bigger, but we play it safe. So
that's what you got to do, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, Lance, nice to talk to you. Anthony, good luck and hope it all turns around soon.
Much appreciated having a chat to us. Thanks.
Good on you. Thanks, Lance.
Thanks, Anthony.
Last week I had the opportunity to go to the Jewish Museum in Sydney and listen to a talk by Tom Fleischman about his experiences as a young boy in concentration camps across Europe during the Second World War. It's always a sobering experience to go to the Jewish Museum and wander around and think of those times and what those people endured and think about the times we live in now. This email from Kathleen Whelan from Melbourne, she says, Ian, I'd love to tell you about the De Niro boys and the story about my late father, Berthold Meyer. He was fifth generation in his town of Mulheim an der Ruhr in the Rhineland of Germany, and Jewish. One day on his way to work as a commercial artist back in 1938, he was picked up off the street and sent to Buchenwald concentration camp. Not an extermination camp at that time, fortunately, but a labour camp. He was there for around 8 weeks and was then one of the lucky 40 men to be chosen by a British Jewish Welfare Society visitor to be deported to Britain, where he was interned at Lord Kitchener's camp near Sandwich. He and all other German deportees, the majority Jewish, had a relatively free life there, but later, when World War II was declared, were joined by other British men of German descent, aged 16 to 70 or so, also interned as possible spies for Nazi Germany. In 1940, the British government decided to deport these men, my father being one of the 2,500 to be sent to Australia. They were put on board Her Majesty's transport Dunera, where they were very badly treated. They disembarked in Sydney and were sent to Hay in New South Wales as enemy aliens for internment, and a year or so later were sent to Tatura in Victoria. Many of the men were well educated and whilst in the camps set up university lectures, art schools, choirs and orchestras, and even a theatrical group putting on concerts and reviews. My father was a member of the theatre group, helping with set designs for productions. A telly movie was made in the 1980s, The Dunera Boys, which starred Warren Mitchell. It was shown on the ABC and is still available as a DVD. Some of my father's recollections and sketches were used by the producer Ben Lewin for the production. In 1942 or so, the British government decided that a mistake had been made in sending these men to Australia as enemy aliens, and their status was changed to friendly aliens. They were given the choice to return to England or to stay in Australia by joining the Australian Army as members of the 7th or 8th Employment Companies, where many became farm workers and fruit pickers or wharf labourers in Melbourne. My father became one of the latter, and their camp was then at Camp Pell, where the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne now stands. While in the Army, my father was involved in the production of the play review Sergeant Snow White, which was put on at the Union Theatre Melbourne University in 1943 to excellent reviews. When World War II was over, my father was discharged from the army and married Charlotte, whom he had met at a supper dance in Melbourne, put on by the Jewish Welfare Society. My father changed the spelling of his last name to Meyer and became a well-known commercial artist in Melbourne under the names of BIM, BIM, his initials. He worked for many Jewish associations as well as becoming the set designer, lighting man and stage manager for all the floor show at Melbourne's Chevron Hotel during the 60s and 70s. I was born in 1948, says Catherine Whalen, and had the opportunity of meeting many of the performers. In a recent tidy-up at home, I came across my father's hand-painted scroll showing each of the scenes of the Sergeant Snow White production and decided to donate it to the Tatura Camps and Immigration Museum. On Sunday the 16th of April, there was the 83rd reunion of the Dunera boys, now only being descendants, at the Tatura Museum when the scroll was officially accepted for exhibition. I believe there's only one Dunera boy still alive in Australia, Bert Brent, in Sydney, aged 101. Kind regards, Kathleen Whelan, née Meyer. Thank you very much, Kathleen. This is the All Over News from Christy Day. Ian, last week, Mothers Union members from branches all over the Northern Territory and Queensland, including the Torres Straits, gathered in Mackay, Queensland, for the 2023 Provincial Conference. Mothers Union is a mission organisation that promotes and supports positive family relationships. We also support families who have met with adversity. It's the oldest women's organisation in the world, currently 4 million members through 84 countries. There are still active Mothers Union branches scattered throughout Australia. These branches work on different projects relevant to their communities. Projects such as providing hygiene packs to shelters and hospitals, winter pyjama appeals and family court support are still very much appreciated by the recipients. New members, male or female, young and old, are very much welcome. The conference held in Mackay was a great opportunity for the members to come together, discuss and share ideas. We are blessed with vast cultures across our communities in Queensland and the Northern Territory and gained insight into the different challenges families are facing and how we can help and support each other and those who we serve. Would you please send a shout out to our members who are beginning or continuing their journey home from Mackay and wish them all safe travels. Thanks for all you do, says Christy Day in Mackay in Queensland. Thank you, Christy. And talking about community and community support, helping one another, Jennifer Drenken says, Ian, heard you speaking this morning about people being welcome in communities and getting to know locals and local knowledge. Thought I'd let you know about this program I've become aware of in our area. It's called the Welcome Experience. And the Welcome Experience aims to encourage more essential workers, police, nurses, teachers, to move into regional communities. And at the Eden Killawale Museum, you've probably been there, we're offering to be the venue for the launch of this program in the Bega area. Sounds like a good idea, and I hope it works across the state. There are 8 centres operating in the pilot program. It's called the Welcome Experience. On the line from Blaze Aid is Kevin Butler. Good morning, Kevin.
Oh, good morning, Macca. How are you?
Good, thank you. Tell us what's happening with Blaze Aid. You think you've got a lot of camps and enough workers? What's the story?
Yeah. We've got around about 5 camps going at the moment. We do need more volunteers. But just the story out of Forbes, Peter and Genevieve Farmers up there, they had 530 lambs stolen 18 months ago. Mm. And then in the November, they were flooded. Peter was saving 530 lambs from the floods. He starts having a bit of a heart attack symptoms. His wife tells him, who's a nurse, to get to hospital ASAP. I think the helicopter rescue squad actually picked him up from a very muddy backyard. They almost got bogged. Took him to hospital where he recovered, but sadly the 530 lambs were drowned. And then when he came out of the hospital, his wife, Genevieve, got a broken leg. And then a month later, he had another 400 lambs stolen. This guy, I think he must have run over 20 Chinamen. He's they talk about resilience, but Blaze Aid's there helping him at the moment, which is just a lovely story. Hey, Macca.
Quick.
Also, you might go on, sorry.
No, go. You've got a minute and a half.
Yeah. I might remember a few years ago we had the working holiday visas on people, the backpackers. Well, that's on again now, thanks to the federal government, with the 1 or 3 months if you help or volunteer for Blaze Aid and other recognised not-for-profits after natural disasters. You can actually spend another year in Australia. So we've got a couple of Irish backpackers who are research scientists there at Terelga near Goulburn, but we would love a lot more help there in other camps as well. Mac, I heard you talking a lot about the cold this morning, and you might remember a couple of weeks ago I talked to you about the satellite tagging of the livestock to prevent crime.
Yep.
Well, I've got a little temperature thermometer on the ear. As a part of the tag, and it tells me how cold the lamb is feeling or the mother's feeling.
Wow!
So I've come up with this index. It's called the lamb exposure cold index, and it's able to tell me if the lambs are in danger from dying of the cold, because there's about 10 million die every year from cold. Mm. So I'd love to get something going there.
Quickly. You got anything else to say?
Pretty all it, Macca. Yeah, we've got COVID over in Western Australia. We've had to shut down the base. So I know the government is saying get vaccinated if anyone there is in doubt.
If people want to get in touch with you, phone number is 0418.
530-471. Call any time or just Google Blaze Aid Current Camps. Talk to the coordinator. We'd love to see you. We'll give you a tea when you arrive.
Good on you, mate. Mm. Thanks.
Thanks, Macca.
Thanks, Kevin. Bye.
G'day, Macca. It's Anthony from Coleraine.
Anthony, is it?
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Yes, yep. Anthony. How are you? Good?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. I'm actually just ringing about... I run a local Tinder in the Bin project down here. I've spoken to you once before. And through this project, I'm talking to our local Salvation Army and discovered that people are struggling with electricity bills, as we know. Even firewood's gone through the roof in our local area. People just aren't turning their heaters on. Families that are struggling, they're just to save power, they're just not switching on their heaters. So we're doing a blanket drive. So what I'm trying to do is just encourage people to drop blankets off at my house in the local Salvation Army, in the local St. Vinny's, and just blankets or any bedding, just to try to keep people warm, basically.
Yeah, and it's cold all over because, you know, we had a call earlier this morning from up there in, where was that, Kel? In Claremont. And it was 5 degrees. I mean, and that's in Queensland. And Queenslanders aren't used to cold weather. And Kel, who was that other mob that I mentioned last week that were knitting squares to be put together in quilts? Rap With Love. There's all sorts of people. I remember one of our former Australians of the Year here on Australia All Over, Michael Kelly, was collecting beanies for seafarers who get cold on ships and were stuck on ships. But everybody needs it. Maybe we've got to turn off the heaters, Anthony, and start putting on, as they call it in Tassie, layers. And, yeah. And wearing beanies and all those sort of things and using wraps. And if you watch TV, put a wrap over you and doing the knitting thing again. I have a feeling it's going to be cold this autumn winter.
It is. And just with discussions with Mark, who works in our local Salvation Army, just some of the stories, you know, people just coming to him, families, single mothers with kids, just asking for blankets, asking for doonas. It's getting worse and worse, and it's going to get worse. So I just sort of want to encourage anyone around the country to go to your local state binnies, your local Salvation Army, and drop off a blanket. And we're doing it. Yeah, I'm doing the same here, just sort of, yeah, trying to push for a few and hope we can keep a few people warm.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, you can't, for old people in old people's homes and things like that, you've got to have heating and stuff like that. But for many of the rest of us, I think a layer, put another jumper on and wear a beanie and all those things, some underwear, can probably save you a bundle, Anthony, especially with the price of electricity. Yep. And it seems to be going up all the time, up and up and up.
That's correct. It's 25%. They said it's going up. That's in Victoria. I don't know if that's Australia-wide, but that's just for people that are already struggling. So the fear of that, they just can't afford to switch their heaters on in the morning or at night, you know. And yeah, so you imagine just sitting there and being freezing cold and just having to put layers and layers on when you could normally, because you should just be able to turn some heating on.
We need to start knitting again and everything like that. Anthony, how do people get in touch? What are you, the Salvation Army, is it?
Yeah, Salvation Army and our local St. Binnie. So people in our local area, I have a Tins in the Bin project, which they're aware of, and I've all on our little social media posts, Coleraine and Caston and Buy Swap and Sells, and they can drop a blankets off at my house, which I have a box out the front under my tree. And also, yeah, our local supermarkets, plus the Salvation Army in Hamilton and the St. Binnie's in Casterton.
And I think that'll be Australia-wide, Anthony. So I think people can get in touch with Salvation Army or Vinnie's or even Red Cross.
Yep.
People are always needing, especially as it gets cold, they're needing wraps and beanies and all sorts of things and jumpers and cardigans, whatever gets you through the night, if you know what I mean, Anthony.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, exactly. And creating the awareness of this, thank you very much for people like yourself, Macca, who really allow us to be able to create this awareness, because a lot of times we poke along in our worlds and we don't realise what's going on just around the corner. You know, not everybody's as lucky as everybody else.
Good on you, Anthony. Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, mate. Oh, and our friend Danny's on the line. Good morning, Danny.
Macca, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Where are you?
Well, we've ventured up to Moolamoon up in New South Wales from Victoria. I've come up with some mates to go fishing, and they're out on the lake next to the caravan park as we speak. And the girls caught a couple of yellow belly last night, so they were cooked up. And we caught a heap of carp in the Edwards River, which runs through Moolamoon. But it's a bit brisk this morning out by the lake, about 10 degrees, but it feels like about -3. yeah, but it's beautiful. It's clear. We've had a bit of rain here yesterday, so we chickened out from camping in the tents, so we decided to come down to some cabins in the caravan park.
Yeah, a bloke wrote to me the other day, actually. I haven't read it yet, but it's like a Why I Live Where I Live, and he says, I don't know where he was, but he said, I'm returning to Moolamoon. He said, I'm going to go back and live in Moolamoon because it's where my roots are, and I just love it. I've been back and looked around, he said, and all those old feelings come back. Nice little town, Moolamoon.
It is lovely, Macca. I was walking. I got up early this morning. My son and I just went for a walk down to the main street to grab a coffee, but we'll have to go back again because everyone's sleeping in a little bit this morning, and, you know, it's a little bit like when you don't have to do anything, why bother? It's a lovely, relaxed way of life up here, and it actually makes you slow down. It's a forced relaxed you get, and we'll wander down there again soon and grab a coffee or something like that. But we've been cooking our own food up here and brought all the stuff to do. And it is a lovely place. And my son said, Dad, I don't know whether many of my friends could live up here. And I said, yeah, but here's the thing. You could buy a property up here for, you know, $100,000. or you could spend $1 million down in Melbourne, you know, and then how long would it take you to be rent-free or you're debt-free and start to enjoy life rather than have that stress, that mortgage stress and what have you? And he actually, you can see the light bulb switch on. And it makes a difference. So sometimes you've got to get people out into the country, see the value of what's involved out in the country and the community. And talking to the owner of the caravan park last night, Craig, like he'd spent like a few years in Peru working as an engineer for a mining company down there. And now he's here. He's bought this little caravan park. He's relaxed. He came and had a sit with us around the campfire last night, just sitting around having a chat. It's a different world, Macca.
Danny, it'd be cool and rochy this morning. I was thinking about outside broadcast when it gets cold and I'm standing there on a cement slab and it'd be cold, mate.
Yes, it might be cold, but I tell you what, I don't think the Corellas are at Rochy because they're all up here this morning. There's thousands of them. They woke us up this morning, so they must migrate around and just, you know, check out the towns like we do.
We'll have to go back to Rochy. I'm going to go back to Rochy. How are you travelling? Good?
Oh, not too bad, Mac. I've still got a few, like a little remnants of that operation I had to remove that prostate cancer from. But like I've always said, as long as you've got a pulse, you're going. And we'll work it out as we go. But every day is a gift, isn't it, Mac? When you can wake up and, you know, smell the campfire burning and sit exactly around with your friends and listen to you on the radio. You've had some wonderful stories this morning.
Yeah,
we've been walking around the town with the radio in our pocket, just listening to you and your guests. And it is. It's just a lovely way to spend a Sunday morning.
And a little fire, like as that bloke says, I've never forgotten that I played it this morning. A man without a fire is a man without a life. There's something about looking at the flames and just sitting there and contemplating life, isn't it? It's a slow down moment and we need them.
It is, and we do. You just got to take them, Macca. They're there. You just got to look for them and take them when they arrive. So, look, I'll let you get going because I know you've probably got a million people wanting to share their experiences. But
Danny,
thanks, and good to catch up again, mate.
We love you, Danny. Good on you, mate.
All the best.
See ya. Bye. Bob's in Broome. Morning, Bob.
Good morning, Macca. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
It's a beautiful day up here, Macca. It's a sunny 25. I'm sitting in a caravan park overlooking the Indian Ocean.
Stop making us jealous. What are what are you doing, Bob? Tell us.
I'm on a bike ride. I'm on a pushy. I'm riding around almost around Australia. I started in Townsville on April the 11th. I've now done 4,200 k's. We've arrived in Broome.
Mm-hmm.
We're having a couple of days rest here. The guys I'm with, they've been magnificent support. They're leaving me tomorrow and I'm heading down to Perth. So I'm riding solo, but another good man's come along to join me, Stephen Thompson, a mate from Louth Park in Maitland in the Hunter. I taught him back in the 80s at Yanko Ag High School. He saw what I was doing. He said, "Shera, you can't do this by yourself." And he's driven up here and he's getting here tomorrow and he's going to support me for the next 2 weeks down to Perth. And then after that, Perth back to Newcastle through Adelaide.
Tell me your muse, Bob. What's your last name? Sheridan, is it?
Bob Sheridan, yep.
Yeah, and why you're doing this and for whom and apart from yourself, I mean?
I'm doing it because I can. I want to. I love bike riding, but I'm doing it for the Black Dog Institute. I'm a survivor of abuse as a child, and bike riding has been, with a lot of support from friends and doctors, I've been able to get myself back together. I've fallen in love with the long-distance riding, the joy of the challenge of it. You're fast enough to get from A to B, but slow enough to enjoy the beauty of what we have here. Mainly for raising awareness to mental health and suicide prevention.
Well, good on you, Bob. It's as I said, you're doing it for that, but you're doing it for yourself in lots of ways. I mean, I think it's nice to get out there with some mates too, and you meet lots of people. And it's most of us won't do anything like that, Bob. It's a big item to ride around Australia on a push bike, for God's sake.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I went into this fairly naively. And now that I'm on it, I'm certainly understanding the magnitude of it. But I think that was a good thing that I didn't really understand how big it was. It is huge. But the beauty of Australia, mate, we come from Townsville and we were up to Normanton, down to Mount Isa, Catherine, then from Kununurra through Derby, the Gibb River Road. 500k of dirt, the roughest dirt I've ever been on, but it was also the most spectacular place in Australia. The walks we went on, the gorges, the waterfalls, the swimming holes, absolutely beautiful. And also you meet many different people, and you see the beauty of human, the real beauty of human nature. We've had so much support, people offering us food and water and support all the way along. And I fell off my bike on the Gibb. The last day on the dirt, I fell off and I hurt my ankle pretty badly. But the number of people that came up and nurses and pharmacists and just got me back together so I could keep riding, it was just a beautiful thing.
Bobby, what did you teach at Yanko?
I was a phys ed teacher, right. Phys ed and science. And
So you've retired, have you? Or
I had to retire in 2017. I was pretty crook. And I got myself back together, and now I do casual work. I teach casual. I'm a Newcastle boy now, and I do casual teaching. And I've fallen into a school called St Mary's Gateshead. It's the only place I teach now. I do casual work. The community is a lovely community that support me really well along this way. And I've found the love of teaching again. 40 years of teaching, I didn't regret one bit of it. I started out in Bourke, all over New South Wales. I'm just blessed to have fallen into a career that I truly loved.
Will you keep in touch, Bob? Shero, Shero, yep. Shero, they call you Shero. You keep in touch, Shero, okay?
All right, thanks for taking the call.
It's a pleasure, mate. Nice to talk to you.
Okay.
Good morning, Mecca.
Good morning.
Yeah, it's Samuel here from Borroloola.
How's things, Samuel?
Yeah, a bit chilly this morning, but the sun's out.
Yeah, well, that's the main thing. What's chilly in Borroloola? What is it?
Well, sometime it gets down in June, gets down to four or five degrees.
Well, that is chilly for Borroloola, isn't it? It's chilly.
Yeah, and we're in the southern Gulf of Carpentaria.
Because that's a big temperature differential, because you'd get up to 40 up there in Borroloola at times.
Yeah, 40, 45 sometimes in December, come December.
And now
November, December.
Down to 5. So what are you doing today, for instance, Sam?
Well, I'm ready to get my boat loaded, hooked up. I've got to head out to my homeland on one of the islands out in the Sir Edward Pillar Groups.
Right.
Yeah, I got a place out there, but I work in town. I live in town, Borroloola, but most of the time out on the island. So I'm not when I'm not flying around Australia for my meetings.
All right. Yeah, well, that's a nice thing to do. And the winter's nice, isn't it? Because the dry season, even though it's cool in the morning, I bet the day's lovely.
Yeah, the day's lovely. The sun's out now. I'm just standing walking around in the sun at the moment. I'm just waiting for my grandson to organise his other tow ball for the ute to hook on the boat.
Uh-huh. And, things are going all right, Sam?
Yeah, good, good. I'm always be busy flying out of Borroloola. I'm with the Shire here, with the Robber Gulf Shire in Northern Territory.
Uh-huh. And you got a big bailiwick, a big area to cover?
Yeah, big area. Yeah, I think we're the third largest region in the Territory.
Mm-hmm.
And the wards, we've got 13 councillors and we've got about 14 different communities.
I spoke to a fisherman last week, and he said that it's been a big prawn season and also a big barramundi season because of the big wet that we had, some time ago.
Yeah, and it's good for crabs at the moment because we've got a lot of Asian crabbers here and white crabbers, and they all live along the coastline in our rivers. And the crabs been good at the moment this year, especially this year because of the wet season.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's the big wet brings some bad things, but it brings a lot of good things too, Samuel.
Yeah, that's right, Macca, because I've got to head out now today and try and put some pots in my creek where I live on the island, one of the island, Southwest Island.
Mm.
Yeah, and try and get some feed. Then I've got to come back tomorrow. Then I've got to go off on a men's camp.
Uh-huh.
Northeast of here, we have a men's camp for about a week up at Limon Butte, fishing camp up the coast.
And what happens at the men's camp, Samuel?
Well, we talk a bit of discipline to them, you know, and talk about job opportunities and, yeah, some of the fellows that come out of prison, and we try to, you know, encourage them to get on with life and live a better way and, yeah, find jobs and be more, you know, responsible in the community.
Well, that's good on you. Everybody's got to do that, haven't they? I mean, with young kids, because young kids, doesn't matter who they are, they get tear away, and unless they get a bit of direction from oldies,
yeah. I'm one of the elders here. I'm 62 now, and my tribe is the Yanyana people. We own this land around here, but we share it with three other groups.
Mm.
But we encourage some of our young fellows to come out with us, and older men too as well, and we teach them cultural stuff, and we do this a couple of times a year in our community, and also the ladies have their separate camps.
Exactly. All right, Samuel, I'll come and see you sometime in Borroloola. We were going to go to Borroloola once, but we never made it for some reason, but I'd like to meet you in Borroloola, because it's always nice to meet a local wherever you go in Australia, Sam, because, yeah, you know things, and you can point things out, and you can get to meet other people when you know somebody in the place. So I'll look you up next time I'm coming to the Territory, Sam, and see if we can make a hook up, eh?
Yeah, and good to talk to you, McNamara, because we've got a little town here. It's a population of about nearly 1,500, and then we've got a mines up the road. We've got a couple of mines around us, but it's a good little town. But, I'm born and bred here. But you're welcome, eh? And I'll probably show you around, and even if you have time, I'll take you out fishing in my dinghy.
All right, I'm going to buy myself a dinghy too. I like going out in a dinghy. It's the best way. It's the best way.
It was windy yesterday. That's why I didn't want to go yesterday, but it's calmed down near the wind today.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Samuel, great to talk to you, mate.
Yeah, good to talk to you, McNamara.
All right, Macca. See you, mate.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.